Winston Planning Commission, November 30th, at the Community Center. It's 2022, 7 o'clock. This is a continuance for a public hearing.
Oops. I've been in lots of these fights, I know.
I do. But the problem is, she has cognitive issues right now. Oh, that's what I was talking about. But you can't get this.
The same guy's missing, right?
That's what actually why I took the
If you're interested, I think you're pretty reasonable. I've never seen you really miss your shit.
She's in charge. And it's funny because we've known each other since 2000. He's a good cop.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is 7 o'clock. It is November 30th, 2022. We are going to call this meeting to order. Comments from the audience. Anyone wishing to discuss items not covered on this agenda are welcome to address the Planning Commission as a whole. Please state your name and address for the record. Each speaker will be given a maximum of 3 minutes. Speakers may not defame, intimidate, or use profanity or personal affronts. The commission reserves the right to delay action until they have full information on the issue. And I think we all know what the business is tonight that we're here for. Do I have any old business, Thomas?
Yes, Madam Chair. On the agenda is the updated draft housing needs analysis. So there's a rich history on this particular topic. The updated analysis was emailed to you in electronic copy. Lots and lots of information. We've seen this in previous meetings. One of the things that was updated was the removal of the ag open acreage, as well as any tribal property. And that changed the surplus from 227 to to 151. We thought it'd be a little lower, maybe in the around 100 range is what I think the commission was contemplating, but that gets it down to a more accurate level. So happy to, so what we're doing now is we're reviewing the policies that 3J Consulting has suggested, and we will need to get that information back to them in terms of concurrence, which ones we agree with, which ones potentially we want to add. In our previous workshop, I think that we felt all felt pretty good about the policies that they were recommending, and then we will move towards adoption of that document.
Okay. Adoption, we're going to probably work on that after the first of the year?
Yeah, yeah. I think concurrence will happen for the duration of the month. We'll have one more meeting with them. We have a correlation scheduled for next week, the first week of December, and we will send them a lengthy response in terms of you know, the changes they make. You'll notice in the maps that all of those were updated too. Yeah, all the AO land, everything, particularly the property to the southwest, which would be, that's in city limits. It's the largest property that has the most AO type designation on there. So that was all taken out. And so we have a realistic figure. But we would expect starting adoption after the first of the year.
Okay.
Happy to take any questions.
All right, we're gonna move on to the new business. The continued public hearing. Travis Snyder requesting a conditional use permit for an 89-space recreational vehicle park with amenities. Planning Department file number 22-W008. We are now back in session for the public hearing regarding the Travis Snyder request for a conditional use permit for an 89-acre recreational vehicle park. Winston Planning file number 22-W008. The public hearing was opened on November 16th of 2022, and a continuance was requested by Planning Commission, and the hearing was placed on the agenda for the meeting this evening, November 30th, 2022. The Planning Commission would like to state for the record that all parties requested to be qualified were granted party status. All parties were given the opportunity to offer oral testimony during the first evidentiary hearing, and in addition, were allowed to enter written evidence into the record for an additional 14 days. All requests for submission of material and evidence into the record have been accepted. We are now going to open the floor for those who do not have party status, but would like to request to do so from the commission. Please raise your hand only if you did not get party status at the last meeting and you feel that you need it. Is there anyone in the audience? Please stand, whoever raised their hand. If you could approach and give your name and address, we'll get you party status, and then we'll have you have a seat again, and we'll call you up in a little bit.
My name is Sue Terwilliger. I live at 123 Amherst Court.
Thank you, ma'am. Go ahead and have a seat, and we'll get to you in just a few minutes. Was there anyone else? Okay. Has staff received any additional written requests for party status?
We have not, Madam Chair.
So, if staff would please present the written supplemental staff report.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, members of the audience. Appreciate everyone coming out today for our second evidentiary hearing. There were a lot of different things that were entered into the record at the previous hearing on the 16th. We have constructed this supplemental staff report. We would also like to enter into the record staff exhibit number 12. This is the deed to the property showing ownership. So just want to pass that to the commission for your view.
Okay.
So we have our set of supplemental findings. We've also entered into the record, and we essentially endeavor to address a number of concerns that arose in directly relating to recommended conditions of approval, code criteria, municipal requirements. And I'd just like to go through those briefly with you real quick. So the first one being a large concern was raised in regards to the traffic impact analysis or study that was entered into the record as a staff exhibit. One of the concerns was that it may be previously outdated. There were a number of issues with it. It did not attribute the turning situation on Abraham or State Highway 42. One of the points and objectives of the supplemental staff report is to point out the fact that there were a number of things that were included in that traffic impact analysis. What it did include was a reasonable build out of vacant properties to the west, existing conditions, those types of things. It did also include the PM peak hour queuing and average daily trip information for the turn from Highway 42 to Abraham, which illustrated 31 daily trips per PM peak hour. So wanted to make sure we had that covered in terms of finding. It did also cover all sorts of traffic, larger traffic, school bus traffic, those types of things were factored in. The analysis more specifically included Abraham Timothy, Abraham Teal, the RV Park Access Point, Abraham Pintail, in addition to the aforementioned areas. Another issue that came up was verification of ownership. Staff has provided staff exhibit number 12 that illustrates proof of ownership. One of the other issues that did come up also was the question of the ag open zoning and dwelling units, the availability of that in the code. There is a very specific code criteria that says you're allowed to have a single family dwelling, but you have to maintain 10 acres per dwelling unit. One of the principal things that we wanted to cover about the makeup of cabins, I don't know how many of you do camping or go to state campgrounds, those things like that. Cabins typically lack the elements of a true dwelling. And one of the things that we wanted to clarify here is that the definition of a dwelling unit is it has to have a fully functional kitchen, it has to have a bedroom, it has to have those types of elements. These cabins lack that definition because they lack a fully functional kitchen, which means a refrigerator, a kitchen stove, a sink, and kitchen plumbing, those types of things. So we did support and make the findings that they are by definition incidental and accessory to the RV park or a campground. Another issue that was raised in the previous hearing was the application did not provide an engineer's proof of a no rise, and that's directly related to a portion of the property being in the floodway. We have a condition of approval that addresses that. There is no development whatsoever in the floodway unless a no rise analysis produces or certification is produced and constructed that illustrates new cross sections set down on the obstruction, and it still illustrates a no rise, meaning that you're not going to push water on other people's property downstream. Number six, or criteria point six here, the application does not include a formal wetland assessment. DSL did respond, or the Department of State Lands, they did respond in the normal fashion and indicated there is potential wetlands. You need to hire a wetland delineator and figure out if it is a wetland and what the boundaries are. That's been made a condition of approval. There isn't any kind of development that can take place unless we see the wetland delineation. And there really isn't anything in the code that dictates that it has to be required in conjunction with the application materials. So it's that was made a condition of approval. So number seven, the application does not acknowledge nor provide any inclusion of protection measures for Salmonoid Stream. We have findings that address our local drainage analysis plus detention that's required and concurrence with our city engineer, in addition to the state DEQ 1200C permit that regulates over an acre any grading or any potential runoff. These conditions are meant to require zero impacts on the stream. We have an additional condition that runs in concert with the riparian vegetation area. No development whatsoever within 50 feet of the high bank. So essentially what that does is that is by virtue of the requirements and the conditions that communicates to the developer that this development can't affect in any way possible this stream. A Salmonoid study would be required if there was in-stream work taking place. And we know with this particular development, there isn't. So another issue that was raised was the 180-day or the length of stay situation. Winston Municipal Code section 154.105B3 states that a recreational vehicle located in the floodplain has to be on the site for fewer than 180 days or be fully licensed and road ready for highway use. Because of the magnitude of the concern for the length of stay, the conditions reflect the time constraint and not the, essentially we have a criteria that says this or that. And the criteria reflects addressing a length of stay rather than allowing an infinite or perpetual amount of time, it's particularly in the floodplain. We want to make sure that the units always stay road ready and quick disconnect, and that they are on the site fewer than 180 days or 6 months. The findings of fact that were submitted by qualified parties also requested that we address and we add 8 additional conditions. Those have been discussed, or we have findings of fact that address each of those, which was sent 7 days prior to the hearing, so we won't go super in detail with those. There's one additional area that we would like to address prior to taking any questions from the Planning Commission. Notice of the proposed land use application was sent to the State Historic Preservation Office on October 31st. There wasn't any response received. There was a response received back in 2017 in the previous file, which necessitated, so this is the state office that governs archaeologic type finds or tribal or Indian burial type artifact, those types of things. So there was a response received from that state office in 2017. The response was, make sure you they get permits from our office prior to doing any disturbance. So the concern did rise during the 14-day open evidence period. So staff did contact their office directly and feels it necessary to recommend an additional condition of approval. That because the site has a probability to contain pre-contact archaeological resources, there is an additional condition, which would be condition number 31. The applicant property owner shall coordinate with the State Historic Preservation Office and acquire any necessary permits prior to any ground disturbance directly related to the State Historic Preservation Office, case number 17-0156. That concludes my staff report. Happy to take any questions.
I would like to just make, to clarify on the cabins and the RVs. When we say they have to be road ready, that means that people are not going to be putting up little fences around the bottom to make storage underneath. They're not going to be putting on attached porches and such like that. Those are not going to be allowed. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
I would believe that's going to fall under
the code enforcement office.
And yes, we do have one.
Can I ask a question?
No, not at the moment. We'll get to you in just a moment if we need to.
Well, it pertains to him.
Pardon, sir?
It pertains to what he said.
Thomas.
Go ahead real quickly, Stan. State name, address.
Can you state your name and address for the record, please?
Leonard Bridges, Northwest Brock Drive, Wedgwood, Oregon.
Go ahead.
I'd like to see exactly what you said on what contains a cabin. You were saying something that didn't have a stove or a sink or an oven or anything in there?
Yeah, happy to address that. So there's two things on that. The Winston Municipal Code defines a dwelling unit as a suite or two or more habitable rooms which are occupied or which are intended or designated to be occupied by one family with facilities for living, sleeping, cooking, and eating. The Oregon Building Code defines a dwelling unit as a single unit provide complete independent living facilities for one or more persons, including permanent provisions for living, sleeping, eating, cooking, and sanitation.
So if these cabins are going to be kind of like the ones like when you go to like Bastendorf and you have a cabin shell that has like a table and chair in there and it has a couple of beds, but there's no kitchen, no bathroom, that kind of situation. Those are the kind of cabins that we're speaking of, is that correct?
Yeah, and the point of this finding is to highlight essentially the nature of the proposed cabins and what they are. If they meet the definition of a dwelling, then we would be, as city staff, offering a recommendation to remove those because they are not consistent with the ag open requirements or subsection 9 for a dwelling. You have to have 10 acres, and it's only 19 acres, and they're proposing 13, which would mean they need 130 acres. So the idea of this is to flush out the fact that, as is the case with many cabins, it doesn't meet the definition of a dwelling unit, which would allow it to be considered incidental or accessory in RV park.
Can I have you come up and go ahead, and we're going to give you a chance to speak as you didn't have a chance last week?
I just wanted to be on the notification list.
Okay. Thank you. Sir, did you have another question?
Yeah, you said it didn't have a kitchen, and he's saying it did have a kitchen.
No. I wanted to make sure that the cabins that this gentleman is proposing to put on this site are not going to have like kitchen facilities or restroom facilities inside the cabin. Kind of like the ones, like I said, when you go to like Bastendorf. Have you ever been in those cabins?
No.
They're basically a cabin shell with a little porch on the front of them. They have no kitchen. They have no restroom facility inside. They're just basically an open room with maybe a table and chairs and a couple of beds. And so those, because they don't fall under the code of a dwelling with all the inside stuff, it makes them more of an accessory type dwelling than
a
dwelling.
Can we offer more seating to anybody who doesn't currently have it?
Does that kind of clarify it? Is it clear as mud for you?
It clarifies it to a certain point, but if it doesn't have a bathroom and stuff in it, then how can people stay in it?
Well, because the park itself will have bathroom facilities, but it just the cabin, the little cabin won't have bathroom facility. So, like when you go to a state park and you stay in one of the cabins there, they have bathroom and shower facilities, but you may have to walk down a pathway and share that with several other places inside the park. It's kind of a communal situation, but they are not in the cabins. The cabins themselves are just shells.
Okay.
Thomas, did the report on the archaeological site, did I know they didn't give you an answer back, but do you expect any answer from them on that or not? To do an archaeological study?
I talked with the state office verbally. So they apologize for not responding, but they do require that the applicant correlate with them and get any necessary permits from their office. So we added the additional condition as a recommendation. Part of it.
Does the applicant have anything he would like to address on these questions or anything that he would like to speak on?
Travis Schneider, 205 I Street, Eureka, California. I did have an opportunity to speak with Mr. McIntosh regarding some of the revised conditions. We spoke at length with regards to the cabins. We clarified a number of the other added recommendations, and we are in agreement with those added conditions.
Does the Planning Commission staff have any questions of the applicant or any of the other parties involved? All right, I'm going to close the hearing. Once the hearing is closed, there can be no further testimony received. Yes, ma'am? One at a time.
Madam Chairman, thank you. Leslie Wilson, 457 Buckhorn Road, Roseburg, Oregon. I'm here to hopefully clarify some information that was just provided. If I might, I have some submittals to for the commission.
Okay, hold on. Let me tell you now, everybody that spoke last meeting, we're not going to hear a whole bunch of more unless it's brand new information. Okay, because you've had plenty of time to submit things, so we're not spending 2 hours going over the same thing. Ma'am, Leslie, go ahead, please. I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
Okay, I do have quite a bit of information to share, but before I do, I think one of the things that needs to be really clarified here, because of what people have been talking about in the cabins, my research was able to uncover about a cabin. For the Oregon Health Authority, a cabin in a recreational park is a structure on a permanent foundation with water, sewer, electrical provided. Usually, it is more extensive furnished with mattress and kitchen facilities. For all intentional purposes, they are interchangeable with a hotel motel. Now, with that said, while some have showers, kitchens, this is not necessary part of their description. With cabins, the operator would be required to obtain a tourist accommodation license in addition to his or her existing RV park license. So, a cabin, yes, the city planners mentioned, is not a dwelling. We concur with that. But what we concur with is it's something else that the state has already defined what it is. And it's defining it, saying it's similar as a hotel motel, which is not permitted in the zone. And that's really important. Now, I've got a whole list of different items that we can go through if you'd like. I've also submitted the same thing in writing to you.
Yes, we've read through that, and it's been much appreciated.
Yes. Well, actually, this stuff here, I don't think has been submitted directly from Thomas to you yet. This I just handed. I have a prelude to discussion. What I'd like to bring out of that discussion and what we are proposing as residents, that the conditions there's several findings of fact that needs to be added to correct or modify conditions of approval to avoid certain constitutional, and that's U.S. constitutional, issues. Simply, we have a Nolan ruling, which is Nolan versus the California Coastal Commission, which ruled about exactions. We also have the Dolan takings claim. And yes, you can put the timer on me. I've already submitted the document. There are people here that have not had an opportunity to talk, but I feel that we'd be extremely constrained not to hear this, these different conditions and findings through everybody that's listening here. I wasn't able to go and provide copies to everybody so they can follow along. 15 copies cost $50 out of my pocket, not my clients, but my pocket. And I believe this is so important because there are several conditions of approval that has been put on the application that, my professional opinion, should not be. The reason I'm saying that is those conditions are referenced directly to city code. If an applicant were to choose to appeal that condition, it works almost like a variance, but there's no variance permit, no variance application, no variance approval process. It's just deletion of code. That's where there's a failure here. So I might suggest here wording such as the applicant, developer, or owner must comply with all applicable adopted Winston Comprehensive Plan goals and policies, the zoning ordinance, and all state, federal rules, regulations, and laws. One sentence. And what it does is, if you go through there, I've got a page here, I've got to come back to it myself. I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, actually 13 conditions that can be deleted from Thomas' staff report with this one sentence. That's why I'd like to have this discussion here, this presentation here, because there are everything from missing information at the early recommendation, because we do have a recommendation here provided, of denial, and there's reasons behind a recommendation for denial. We also have provided recommendations alternative for approval. And we recognize that approval was also provided in 2017. It was approved by the Planning Commission. It was taken to the City Council on appeal. The appellant and a party appealed it. It was cleaned up and approved. The project didn't move along for various reasons. What I'm trying to say here is there's pattern and practice in place. So either you go and follow some of what I got here to say no, or you take these alternatives and new findings, new conditions, and apply them to the application or the approval to strengthen it. Because it is our belief, our assumption, and if I might read, we believe that if we move forward with this hearing, this developer and applicant is very knowledgeable of the land use process. Extremely knowledgeable.
Well, I'm going to stop you there, and I'm going to let the next one speak so that they have their opportunity. And I appreciate everything that you have put forward. Thank you. Go ahead, sir. Step forward.
James Alvord, 1090 Abraham Avenue.
Margaret Peach, 130 Northwest Teal Street, Winston. Staff has failed to cause the applicant to submit materials for any needed level of review required that must be used to evaluate an application to avoid a rough proportionality nexus, as found under Nolan, to review this application and apply condition of approval because of a sub-quality development application. In Nolan versus the California Coastal Commission, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that an exaction, a condition of approval, is legitimate if it shares an essential nexus with the reasons, findings, that would allow rejection of the permit altogether. How can appropriate findings be made without submittals by the applicant? Staff and the opposing parties have identified many areas of concern for commission review. It appears the applicant is setting up the city for a takings claim. As a violation of the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution under a Dolan argument, and in Dolan versus City of Tigard, the court required compensation for an exaction that required donation of land for a public greenway and the bike path because a private greenway would have been sufficient and the City of Tigard was not specific enough about the benefits of the bike path. Let it be known, as we move forward with this hearing, this developer applicant is very knowledgeable of the land use processes in both California and Oregon. Therefore, we the parties have identified the following to be read in full. Environmental, traffic, site, city code, application incomplete, neighborhood specific. Parties proposed alternative number one. Parties request a full and complete denial of this application based on inadequate, incomplete, and missing submittals normally accompanied. Those items include outdated traffic impact analysis, 6 years old. The burden of proof directly related to the applicable criteria was not adequately covered with just the submitting of the conceptual plan. Missing current proof of review by ODOT, the applicant failed to submit any proof of review by ODOT staff. Analysis missing at the intersection of Abraham Avenue and Oregon Highway 42. Staff makes reference to this intersection on page 2 of supplemental staff report dated November 23, 2022. Second note, first paragraph, and staff wrote, and although they weren't the focus of the study. Traffic impact analysis missing the inclusion of anticipated traffic generated from the DC Co-op store and gas station.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll have the next one move right on up.
Hold on one second. Thomas, have you had a chance to read the wording of this beforehand, or is this the first you've seen it?
This is brand new. I've never seen this. So I just a question. I'm not sure when this was done or the reasoning why it's being submitted tonight and not the full 2 weeks that was available.
Yeah, and obviously we're just reading through all of this, and so if you have most of this is from what I am reading, and a lot of this is stuff that we have already been given information on. Just in a little bit different wording.
Madam Chair, if I may, there's been several references and discussions between staff and myself. What this document does is correct those references. We have cited those corrections, and we have provided you with alternatives, again, one for denial and reasons, one for an alternative to adopt, and with findings for adoption, and also conditions, increased, as Thomas said, modifications to the language of those conditions, because there's simple things that was left out of those conditions, such as sprinklers for the grass areas.
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to go with our staff reports, our staff supplemental report, all of the information that has been given to us. And so if there is someone who did not get to speak, which was Sue last time, we're going to move through and start this proceeding going
If you don't mind, so, then I would like to have my time for, allowed for rebuttal, because I've worked for several years in the planning profession. I've never had staff that I've told to do or been near staff that's actually rebutted in a staff report parties, comments, and findings. Never.
Can I clarify on that, Madam Chair?
Yes.
The supplemental staff report, what essentially it accomplishes is addressing the different things that were brought up in regards to questioning the criteria or the conditions that were recommended.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, there was needed clarification. Other than that, it's simply a neutral set of findings of fact. That's all.
Is there anything in those that we need to adopt into what we have? Any changes that need to be made or that we could make that would complete our files we have it now?
Well, I can only speak in terms of what the Winston Municipal Code and the criteria say to add in, which is reflected in the material that we have tried to present. Again, I have not looked at this. I'm confused on if there is a request to deny or if there's a request to essentially restructure language or semantics and conditions or how.
Right, and it has, there's none of this has been submitted before just handing this to us tonight, correct?
Correct.
If I might, alternative one clearly says parties request a full and complete denial.
And you're well within your right to ask for that, but we're going to have to discuss it amongst ourselves what we just need to do. And then it can go on from there. You guys have done a remarkable job as a community trying to come together and present your ideas and your concerns, which is greatly appreciated. It really is. But I think at this point, we need to move forward and clarify some things within ourselves and did make a decision. So, thank you very much.
Questions for the developer?
Sure, sir, go ahead and step forward. You were the first one who came up earlier. We lost you somewhere along the way.
I have a couple of questions for the developer, Snyder.
Can you state your name and address?
Jim Alvord, 1090 Abraham Avenue.
Thank you.
The developer. There's four properties on Abraham. I'm one of them. How close are your shacks going to be to my house?
Do you want that answer right now, or do you want me to?
I'm curious. Am I going to be able to throw a rock and hit a crack shack, or?
There can't be any direct exchanges between.
No, you have to address it to me.
Okay.
So you're going to want to know how close the cabins are going to be to your property.
Yes.
And
all
what
of
was
our
your other question?
All of our properties.
What was your other question?
Are they going to be Section 8 approved?
You wouldn't need. Why would you need Section 8 approval for a cabin in an RV park?
Yeah. We'll see. I'm thinking.
You can't.
Well, how about this?
Okay.
Do you have to walk? Do you have to drive in to rent a cabin, or can you walk in?
Have you seen the map?
Yes.
Good question.
All right.
And it's really not that clear.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
I will have him go ahead and have a seat, sir. I'll have him come up, and I will ask him those questions. So I'm thinking that one of their concerns is can any homeless person off of the street walk in and rent your cabin?
I think the first of all, point of clarification, they're cabins, they're not shacks. secondly, as a nightly rental, Section 8 would not necessarily apply. We reserve the right to refuse service to anyone as part of our operation, but yes, we do have walk-up customers periodically. So we do have reservation customers as well as walk-up customers.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Concerning on-site management.
Yes.
24-hour management?
Yeah, we have a host on-site at all times at all of our parks. And then, of course, we have normal business operating hours. So there is an emergency number just because stuff does happen, such as, you know, trailers running over sprinklers or running over other water facilities or utilities that do require on-site assistance at all times, 24 hours a day.
And how often do you check on your staff to see that they are following through with their duties?
You know, that's a great question. I have a general manager who manages all of our employees. Just like with any operation, there's not a flawless operation, and as one well knows, in today's day and age, you know, you live through the internet, and anything that's posted to the internet is public information, and sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad, sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not. So we do have our general manager visits at all of our parks once a week, and we do have weekly conversations with each one of our on-site managers.
Another question that the gentleman had concerns about was lights shining into other homes, surrounding homes. I would imagine, I know there's a lot of landscaping being required, so I would hope that you're taking that into account, that no one's shining there.
Lighting is a very sensitive issue, not only for off-site, but also on-site. No more so than people want light off-site, do people want it on-site. So it's more of a safety issue as far as providing lighting. There are code requirements as far as the lighting is concerned, but at the same time, people in RVs trying to sleep don't want any more light than's necessary either.
Thank you.
Anybody else have a question?
You didn't answer my question.
Which one?
How far are they going to move away from my house?
I don't know which house you own, per se, but...
The first one.
Yeah, I apologize. I don't know which one that is right off the top of my
head. Have you been there?
No, I have not been to your house. I apologize.
Have you been to the site?
The cabins are scaled accordingly on the plan, and the distance from each respective site can be determined from that.
Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, just to clarify, all structural development has to meet setbacks to the property line. So you will see a minimum of 20 feet. Beyond that, we would need to look intricately on the conceptual plan, and that would need to be entertained when a permit is being pulled for structural development. But a minimum 20 feet away from the property line.
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
I moved here in, or I bought a couple of houses in Hunter's Crossing when they were first built. And the area is very nice. With the DC Co-op coming in, that is enough for us there. In that little area, you're going to just ruin everything that there is. And what I didn't know was that DC was putting in a service station too, and that's even going to be worse. And with that little street there and two-lane road on 42, I just think it's insane. And you're ruining our community if you approve it.
Yes. All right. I'm closing the hearing. Once the hearing is closed, there can be no further testimony received without reopening the hearing. Is there a motion to now close the hearing and begin discussion by the...
I would like to speak on one more item.
One more. Last person talking.
Oh, my God.
Well, me. It's all talking.
Really? Wow.
You didn't answer the questions. Good for the first one. Yes is not
a
full answer.
Nancy Bridges, 110 Northwest Brock Drive. I am going to be directly behind this RV park, and my house looks right onto it. My biggest concern, I have taken this out of an article from the local government, it's a news magazine from Humboldt County regulations. And anyways, they have talked a lot of times about the problems with Mr. Stoddard not following the regulations, and local business owner Travis Schneider violated the terms of the coastal development permit. He did so by laying down an unpermitted access road through some environmentally sensitive habitat by using a Cat 310. That's not a little critter. Excavator to clear blackberry brambles and other foliage from the property, potentially damaging the tribal cultural area. And he had a stop order on this and continued to pursue it. There was a couple other items in here where he had asked for a permit for an RV building and got the permit, started doing a re-roof, built a second story. Now my question is, we can set guidelines, but how are we going to control these guidelines? This man does not seem to follow all the guidelines. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I think we have to hope that our people who enforce the codes and the conditions are perhaps a little better at their job than what they may have been in another city or state. But we cannot answer to the codes of another city or state or county even. So all we can do is hope that our group is better at handling any situation that comes up like that and holding Mr. Schneider to the conditions that we put on his such, on his property. If it's accepted, yeah, I don't even know yet what is going to go from there.
It just seems to me that somebody that violates permits, the codes.
Excuse me, sir, can you, if you're going to entertain, we need a name and if you're going to entertain more public comment.
Vera Potter, 335 Pintail Avenue, Winston. It is just unfathomable how we can, sorry, it's very emotional.
It's a very emotional thing for everybody, so I totally understand, because obviously, you know, there's a lot of emotions when something like this is trying to come into your community.
I ask him why he wanted our little piece of property. He said it's because everything's there. Obviously, everything is not there with what we have come up with. And I don't understand how any committee that Winston has could actually consider anything this man says.
Deep breath, hon.
He's actually stood up to the commissioner in Humboldt County and said, no, I am not going to stop building. How can you trust anybody that does crap like that?
Ma'am, we cannot judge by character. We cannot. That's not what the Planning Commission is allowed to do.
Well, it has to come into question. He's willing to break.
We have read all the information that was submitted, all of those articles. We've read them.
I don't see how it could even be considered.
I don't know what kind of motions that they're going to make at this point. I'm still trying to get through all of this, and we'll close the hearing and discuss and see what motion they make.
One more statement. Wait a minute, I forgot what it was. Wait a minute.
No, you're fine.
Anybody who votes and says, yes, he can do this, you're done with it. As a community, we have to live with it 24/7.
Well, we are a part of the community, and we have to live with whatever decisions are made as well.
Yes, but it's not in your backyard.
Just for a point of clarification here, I think the thing that's being missed by you people is we have state laws, county laws, and city laws that we have to follow. We can literally be sued if we don't follow those laws. The city can be sued. We can't just say, okay, we don't like this plan, we don't accept it, it's not coming in. That would put us under lawsuit. As a planning commission, we have to follow state, county, even sometimes federal law if it, you know, came down to an archaeological dig or, you know, something else. So what you people have to realize is we are set on by the laws of, you know, of how far we can go, what we can accept or what we can make as a condition. Those laws have already been set and we have to follow them. Each one of us up here, if we say, this is just an example, if we were to deny one of these projects, it would go to appeal, the city would probably be sued, the planning commission. So that's where we are. So that's why we have to be so very careful with this. We understand, we live in this town. You know, I live on the other side of town, but there's two up here that live on this side of town where you guys live. We're citizens here too. Even though we may not like this project, as a planning commissioner, we have to put that aside and look at it objectively without bias. And we have to follow the law whether we like them or not. And so we do understand, and we're trying to work and give and take where we can on this. So I hope you guys understand the predicament we're in, because we don't want the city sued. We don't want to get sued by objecting this and he come back and sue us.
And here's the thing, whether this goes as to denial or acceptance, there are appeal processes for everything, and that goes back then to the community. So we're just going to do the best that we can and hope the best for everyone involved and go from there. And I sympathize with all of you. Like Rob said, it has... our personal preference on this issue has no bearing on any of what we decide. And sometimes that feels like a bad thing. We wish we could decide, make a decision based on our feelings, but we cannot. So now, for the last time, I am closing this hearing. No further testimony is going to be received. Do I have a motion to close the hearing and begin discussion by the Planning Commission?
So moved.
In favor, aye.
Aye.
Madam Chair, your deliberations, just to remind you, do have to be on the record, and so it has to be heard by all.
I just said, wow. Here we go. We've received a lot of information. Does anyone want to make a motion?
Or if you need clarification, make sure and ask Thomas. That's why he's there.
I just wonder about the age of the traffic impact study.
Turn your mic.
Thomas, can you clarify the age of the traffic impact statement and how that came into being?
Yes, the previous application was submitted in 2017. Mid-2017, the traffic impact analysis was completed shortly after by Clamau and Associates, and an engineer out of Eugene. There's a staff exhibit in the previous with the previous staff report that where it's attached. I also sent electronic copies to Planning Commission and anybody who requested it.
Well, I'm just asking about. My question is the age of the traffic study.
2017.
Well, no, I understand that, but what's changed? I mean, that's.
Yeah, so essentially that was something. I'm sorry, were you finished with your question? I didn't want to cut you off. So that was something with the, when looking at the application, when looking at developing the findings and conditions, is if a new traffic impact analysis was potentially going to be requested. We had correlated with Michael Horowitz from ODOT or the Oregon Department of Transportation. And of course, they did not have much of a response other than requesting a copy of it, being that there's no new access points coming off Highway 42. So one of the things we considered was, do we need to potentially require a new one? So we tried to look into the nuts and bolts of the impact study and what it did. And we wanted to ask the question, would it produce anything, any new because of the changes in the area? Based on everything that the traffic impact analysis produced and its conclusions, how it factored in reasonable build out of the RV park, the co-op, vacant properties to the west, existing properties, average daily trips, all those types of things. It became clear, at least to staff, that the existing traffic impact analysis was sufficient to enter into the record, and it wasn't necessary to require a new one.
That's a joke.
It was a faulty report. Yeah.
So even though the
record has been made closed. Sorry, Madam Chair.
Do you have any questions?
Can you decide again?
I don't have any questions whatsoever at this point. I need a motion for acceptance or denial.
Well, I'll make a motion at this time to deny the application of the conditional use permit of the 89 space recreational vehicle park with amenities, planning department file number 22-W008. Personally for me, there's too many questions that haven't been answered and not enough information, but that's my opinion.
You're right.
Yep. Do I have a second?
I second.
All right, call for a vote.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is, application is denied at this time. Okay, any other business tonight?
Not at this time, Madam.
For the good of the order?
For the good of the order, I'd just like to introduce our newest Oregon legislature, Virgil Osborne.
Adjourned at 8:03 p.m.
We need a vote on the record to close.